from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri is one of 18 states that allow citizens to use the initiative petition process to pass constitutional amendments. And for years, Missouri Republicans have argued that the current standard to put things in the Constitution, a successful statewide vote, is too easy. So the GOP-dominated General Assembly put Amendment 4 on the ballot. It would require any constitutional amendment put before voters through the initiative petition process to pass in 8 out of 8 congressional districts and through a 50% plus one statewide vote. This measure is getting a lot of attention and a ton of opposition from a number of powerful groups. You'll hear from the spokesperson of one of these organizations trying to defeat Amendment 4 in a few minutes. But Amendment 4 also has its fans, including the Missouri Farm Bureau, an influential group, especially in rural parts of the state. And joining us now to make the case to make it much, much harder to approve some constitutional amendments is Missouri Farm Bureau President Garrett Hawkins. Garrett, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Well, thanks, Jason. It's been a few years since I've been on your show. Appreciate the opportunity.
Appreciate you coming back. Why did the Farm Bureau decide to endorse Amendment 4?
Well, actually, our members for about 40 years now have recognized that the threshold for amending our state's most sacred document, the Constitution, should be raised, that the bar should be raised, and it should be more difficult to amend our Constitution. So when this opportunity came about, we see it as a once-in-a-generation opportunity to get us back to an improved process for how our Constitution is amended here in Missouri.
There have been a lot of legislative proposals in the past few years to make it harder to amend the Missouri Constitution, and that includes raising the threshold to 60% or 57%, or requiring an amendment to pass in a majority of congressional districts. This requires passage in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. Why do you think it is necessary to place arguably the most restrictive proposal ever against the constitutional initiative petition process before voters?
Well, first of all, I think, Jason, it's important to note that this still allows for a citizen-led process. I liken it more to like the Electoral College, honestly, if you think about it at the federal level. You know, what we see oftentimes, and especially over the last 10 years with constitutional amendments, is that oftentimes rural Missouri is left out of the conversation from the very beginning. Signatures aren't gathered in rural areas. Slick ad campaigns aren't ran in rural areas unless we happen to see when we're watching television in the Kansas City or St. Louis, Springfield or Columbia markets. And so oftentimes, you know, we're then faced with the decision when we go to the ballot box. So, you know, as we think about how to have a more robust conversation about what should be a framework document for government, that's what excites us, that this is actually an improvement in the process that ensures that all Missourians are involved in the conversation of how and when to amend our Constitution.
There have been some pro-Amendment 4 groups that have, like, put maps up and said this initiative petition constitutional amendment only passed in highly populated areas and was rejected in a lot of rural counties. But, and I don't mean to demean rural counties, but fewer people live there. So it doesn't seem like that is a meaningful distinction if one county has 10,000 people and another has 1 million, and the million-person county voted for it more. So why would it matter if, like, a lot of sparsely populated counties didn't vote for something in terms of whether something should go into the Constitution or not?
Well, I think it gets back to how the conversation starts, and the conversation never starts on a widespread basis across the state. The conversation is initiated in Kansas City and St. Louis primarily to start with. That's where the signatures are gathered. That's where the millions of dollars are spent on slick ad campaigns. So rural Missourians only get involved in the conversation sometimes only when they enter the ballot box and are faced with the question. So This is about process and improving process to make sure more Missourians are involved in the conversation. That's what we've got to get back to.
Do you think there would be as many initiative petition constitutional amendments if lawmakers weren't habitually overruling voter-approved statutory changes? Because you alluded to the fact that this doesn't make any changes to initiative petitions that want to change laws, but it seems like that's not being used as much because the legislature could just obliterate it if they don't like it.
Well, you know, so yes. So you get back to the fact that 18 states have a citizen-led process for amending their constitutions, and arguably Missouri is one of the easiest states in which to amend the Constitution. And then you look at this evolution of using the Constitution to literally be a litany of special interest carve-outs or business protections. That's exactly what we've seen with the marijuana amendment. That's what we've now seen with sports betting. I mean, Jason, there's a playbook that Missourians should be aware of. You see a lot of times wealthy out-of-state interests or companies, just like what we saw with sports betting, they pin their own ballot language. They pay professional signature gatherers, primarily to canvass Kansas City, St. Louis, Columbia, Springfield. They pump millions of dollars in slick ad campaigns in those, as you would say, population-dense areas. And then once passed, they're able to sit back and enjoy the profits from their special interest protections. That's exactly what's happening. So, you know, we should be questioning, is it okay for Missouri's constitution to go well beyond other states? There are four states that have constitutional amendments with regard to marijuana. By far, we are the only state that goes so far as setting up taxation, licensing, regulation. One-fifth of our constitution is marijuana policy. And I still come back to the fact of, do we want our state constitution to be a framework for government, or do we want it to be bought and paid for by special interests? And what we've seen in recent years, businesses writing their own language, writing their own protections, and then sitting back and profiting on our backs. That's the question that people should be asking themselves.
One of the more controversial provisions in Amendment 4 is that a proposed amendment put on the ballot by the legislature would only need a 50% plus one vote instead of having to pass in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. You're not a member of the legislature. You didn't end up passing that. But why is that? Why should there be two standards to pass a constitutional amendment?
Well, keep in mind, Jason, 32 states only allow a constitutional amendment that comes through the legislative process. So the majority of states only allow that way. Now, in terms of the legislative process, again, I'll get back to all of us have elected representatives and senators. So when you talk about a referendum that's put on the ballot by the legislature, there's a robust conversation that happens, votes taken that you can hold your legislators accountable. And then ultimately, once it's approved by the legislature, you should be having conversation leading to the ballot box. So that leads to robust conversation. But I would argue that that's not necessarily happening currently through the citizen-led process, where it seems like everything is rammed and jammed ultimately till Election Day.
You've watched the legislative process before, and there's plenty of instances where compromises literally arise at the last minute that get rushed through the process. I mean, is the legislature really a paragon of good policymaking that people should be looking to compared to the initiative petition constitutional amendment process?
Well, I mean, all of us have our frustrations with the legislative process, right? I mean, it's hard to get things done in Missouri. That's the way the process is designed. But it is our process, and we have a responsibility to be involved in holding our lawmakers accountable. And you're right, there are always compromises, particularly when you think about just how rushed the last 2 weeks of session is every year as folks try to get things across the finish line. But still, I still come back to, why is it okay why is it okay for our Constitution to now be a Christmas tree filled with special interest ornaments? It does not make sense. Because anytime problems arise, when you have this much detail in a Constitution, the legislature can't do anything about it. Good luck. Somehow you have to put it back on the ballot for voters if there is a major error. So what's happening now are courts are now interpreting and deciding once all this detailed language is in. Like, the process can be improved, and that's exactly what we're going to have the chance to do in August. Get back to the fact that we need robust, transparent conservation or conversation in which all Missourians are more involved in the process.
I know you are not an attorney, but is there any worry that the Farm Bureau has that a judge may rule that the dual approval standard that we've talked about, so 8 out of 8 congressional districts for initiative petition constitutional amendments, and then 50% plus one for amendments that are put on by the legislature, is there any worry that that standard might not hold up in court? And if Amendment 4 passes, it will basically be very hard to pass any constitutional amendments, whether by the initiative petition process or the legislature putting a constitutional amendment before voters.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess ultimately if passed and if it's challenged, that'll obviously be determined by the courts. But I still come back to, you know, Jason, I've spent 20 years serving Farm Bureau and I'm kind of a policy nerd. And I look at other states. You look at a state like Nevada, where a constitutional amendment has to pass in 2 successive elections, ultimately, to ensure that once it's passed the first time, it has to sit for 2 more years and have another positive vote before the Constitution would be amended. Illinois and New York, that would be, I guess, arguably more liberal-leaning states, have more restrictive processes in place for amending their constitutions. Like, we're trying to get back to the fact that can we all agree that the process can be improved? Can we all agree that what we've seen in recent years where special interests are pinning their own language, they're paying signature gatherers, they're pumping millions into slick campaigns, and then they sit back and enjoy the profits from limited competition? Can we all agree that that is wrong and that we have a responsibility to better protect our framework document for government here in the state?
If Amendment 4 ends up passing, what message do you think it would send about what Missourians think about the initiative petition process for constitutional amendments?
It would be a recognition that we in Missouri believe that the Constitution is a framework document that should be better protected, and that going forward, further amendments to our Constitution truly should reflect a broad consensus across the state. Again, as we celebrate America 250, think about our founding fathers and how they set up the U.S. Constitution. You look at how few amendments have passed in our nation's 250 years. 38 states, I think, have to agree on a constitutional amendment. Then you start looking at a state-by-state breakdown of how they look at their state constitutions. Again, I think Missouri, like, we all want more transparent government. We want better government. We want our legislature to function. But at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, is it appropriate of what's happened in recent years where we see language that should be in statute and regulation now enshrined in the Constitution, and Missourians live with the consequences? That's what we're trying to put before our fellow Missourians this year. And, you know, I think a positive vote will certainly signal that we in Missouri want to do better.
That was Garrett Hawkins, the president of Missouri Farm Bureau. His organization endorsed Amendment 4, which would make it harder to incorporate some amendments into the Missouri Constitution. And joining us now to talk about the opposing side of the Amendment 4 debate is Scott Charton, a spokesman for Missourians for Fair Governance. That group is a long-established campaign committee of the Missouri Association of Realtors. Scott, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Jason. I'm glad to join you and glad to talk about Amendment 4, which is a real threat to the people's power. It's the biggest power grab I've seen from politicians in quite a few years of being around Missouri campaigns and elections.
So why is it one of the biggest power grabs among Missouri politicians that you've seen?
Well, it's the basic unfairness of it, if you think about it. You know, we citizens in Missouri, we've got the power and the freedom to directly propose amendments to the Constitution. The politicians and special interests hate it. For the last 118 years, the citizen-proposed amendments, they've cleaned up political corruption, they've protected taxpayers, reforms that were approved by majority rule, just like we learned in school. But Amendment 4 allows politicians' amendments to pass by a simple majority vote, but you've noted in your interview with the previous guest the unfairness of it. It forces a tougher double standard of passing in 8 out of 8 congressional districts when it's the citizens leading the amendment. So Amendment 4 values your vote based on your street address, your zip code, where you live. It is a hypocritical double standard by politicians, and it destroys one person, one vote. That is a sacred principle. My vote and your vote should count the same as a billionaire or a celebrity influencer or a CEO. And Amendment 4 destroys one person, one vote and majority rule, and it's done by the politicians against the people they're supposed to serve.
There are a number of other states that require more than just a 50% plus one threshold to approve a constitutional amendment. I'm not sure if there are any that require all the congressional districts to vote for an amendment, but I do know, for instance, like Florida has 60% instead of 50% plus one. Why shouldn't, from a philosophical standpoint, the threshold be higher to approve a constitutional amendment in Missouri?
Well, you know, that's a fine discussion to have over a cup of coffee with a friend who doesn't feel the same way. But the fact is, Jason, what we need to be talking about is what voters are voting on right now with early voting and on August 4th, and that is what's in black and white before us with Amendment 4, because Amendment 4 is permanent. That's why it's an amendment. It permanently surrenders the citizens' initiative power to politicians. I like the philosophical discussion, but truth to tell, that's not what's before us. What's before us is in black and white, and it is a power grab by politicians.
Well, I like philosophical discussions too, but your point is well taken there. Another argument that I hear often from Amendment 4 proponents is that the Missouri Constitution is just too big because the Missouri Constitution is just too easy to change. It is objectively larger than the U.S. Constitution, for instance. You've heard that argument many, 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 many times. What's your response to it?
Well, who cares? There's nothing in the rules that says it has to be shorter or longer than the U.S. Constitution. But, for example, your previous guest cited certain proposals that have passed in recent years, and as has been noted, it's because the politicians in Jeff City have overturned and ignored what the people passed on a statutory basis. That's why proponents of certain causes have turned to the Constitution, because it is harder to amend. But here's the problem with that, with Amendment 4, and the way it requires this unfair, undemocratic, you must win in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. What it requires is that if the people someday want to make a change, let's say they don't like recreational marijuana, and the people say, we think we're a majority, and we should have a citizens' initiative on this, they'd have to pass that in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. That will be an impossible task because the marijuana proposal passed in several congressional districts numerically. It's hard to overturn if you just rely on one congressional district and give them the veto. It is the unfairness of it. It could be on any issue if the people want to take a stand. An example could be that, let us say, a conservative in rural Missouri is feeling left out of the conversation, and let's say they want to mount a conservative or rural-oriented proposal. Well, the problem is they get shut out of this because one urban district definitely could be empowered by Amendment 4 to overturn it.
What do you make of the argument that you heard from Garrett Hawkins and you hear from other Amendment 4 proponents that the IP process has been basically used by well-funded special interest groups like legalized gambling or legalized marijuana to bankroll campaigns that put something that's favorable toward their industry in the Constitution?
Well, all they've got to do is look at, on the same ballot we're voting on, a proposed Amendment 5, which would give a huge increase to sales taxes. And many conservatives obviously don't like that. Rural folks don't like it. It's picked up opposition from all over. And you know what? Their funding is coming from organizations that are out of state. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit hypocritical. If it's something they like, they don't seem to see a problem with out-of-state funding and out-of-state influence. Now, let me say this. Missouri Realtors and our campaign committees that are working on this issue, Missouri Realtor funding comes from Missouri Realtors. It's publicly transparent through the Missouri Ethics Commission. And Missouri Realtors are not out-of-state interests. They're your neighbors. They're 25,000 citizens of Missouri. You worship with them. You go to kids' ball games with them. You serve on local public boards with them. And so that is just not true. Citizens should have a voice. Amendment 4 squelches that voice.
You mentioned the Missouri Association of Realtors, who spent some money in 2016 to bar the taxation of services, including ones that are related to the real estate industry. As you alluded to, the Missouri Association of Realtors are trying to defeat Amendment 5 because it would basically, not basically, it would repeal what the voters passed in 2016. So I think one of the other arguments that's come up, not only for Amendment 4, but Amendment 5, is the reason why the realtors are getting involved with this is they basically want to protect what they passed in 2016, which I guess opponents or critics say derisively helps that industry. Is that the reason why the realtors are getting involved with this, or is it more the philosophical belief that the initiative petition process is good and Amendment 5 is a bad idea?
Well, let's set something straight right now. The Missouri realtors, they buy and sell property, but this also affects the people buying and selling property, who are everybody around the state. Here's the history on that. In 2010, the Missouri realtors saw a threat coming in other places of putting a tax on buying or selling a home. So the realtors went out and gathered a citizens coalition and gathered the hundreds of thousands of signatures and put onto the ballot the constitutional amendment of 2010 that said you can't put a tax on buying or selling a home. 83.7% of Missourians approved it. 83.7%, which is a near record, Jason.
Yes.
And so in 2016, the realtors saw a threat, a rising threat, of sales taxes being put on services we use every day, everyday services. Yes, it could be the commission or a fee related to a home purchase, but it's also haircuts and child care and veterinary services, any service you can think of, medical services. So the realtors went out, put that on the ballot. 57% of Missourians said yes, and that is one of the constitutional protections that's now in the ballot. My point is this. If Amendment 4 had been in effect, the no sales tax on services, it lost. It carried everywhere else, but it lost in the St. Louis area 1st Congressional District. That is a conservative idea of not having taxes and not taxing services we use every day. We would not have that protection and wouldn't have had it for the last 10 years, sparing Missourians untold millions of tax money if Amendment 4 had been in place. So it's a double-edged sword.
Defenders of Amendment 4 say the reason why there is this dual standard of allowing things to be put on the ballot through the legislature with 50% plus one of a vote is that things that are put on the ballot through the legislature get more vetting, more public scrutiny, more changes. You heard Garrett Hawkins's argument on that. What is your response to that?
It's laughable. In the case of Amendment 4 that was pushed out to the ballot during a special session with great urgency last fall, there was zero Senate floor discussion. The legislature and certain leaders there wanted this to go to the ballot, and they shut off any debate, no debate on the Senate floor about Amendment 4. Don't tell me that is public and transparent and allows for problems to be found. And let me tell you, Jason, if there had been that discussion on the floor, some big problems in Amendment 4 would have been found. And I'll give you an example of this. Amendment 4 purports to address cracking down on petition fraud. Well, we currently have law on petition fraud in Missouri, and it sets a penalty that prosecutors can do right now of $10,000 with petition fraud. Inexplicably, Amendment 4 reduces that to $1,000. Amendment 4 claims that it cracks down on foreign election donations. Well, right now, the current law, it can be prosecuted right now, is a fine of about five times the amount of the donation that's illegal. Amendment 4 actually lowers that to three times the foreign donation. How is this reform? That's either sloppy drafting, or it's careless, or there was some intentional reason for making it easier for petition fraud and for foreign interference donations to be punished, to go easier on them. And if it was a sloppy error, this is permitted. It's going in the Constitution. So don't tell me the legislature does everything right. This is a big problem with Amendment 4, and it makes it permanent. And you know what? If the people wanted to fix it, with Amendment 4, they'd have to get 8 out of 8 congressional districts. I don't trust the legislature. And I will tell you, folks, on Amendment 4, on August the 4th, trust yourself on this, because the politicians don't trust you.
In the last minute that we have, if Amendment 4 fails, what message do you think it would send about what Missourians feel about the initiative petition process?
It would show that Missourians value one person, one vote, that they believe your vote as an individual, Jason, Scott, everyone listening, should count the same on Election Day. When you walk in there and you vote, you've got the same clout as the president or the governor or a billionaire or a CEO or a celebrity influencer, be it Taylor or Travis. Let me tell you what else. It means when you go in there, you get the say. You get the say. This is a power Missourians gave to themselves 118 years ago. It has cleaned up political corruption. It has protected taxpayers. We need to protect that. We need to vote no on Amendment 4 on August 4th.
One other question that comes to mind. I have used a realtor before, and one of the things I read about the Amendment 4 and Amendment 5 opposition campaigns is the realtors are unmatched when it comes to sign placement. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that might be your secret weapon to defeat both of these
things.
It's
like the secret sauce, isn't it, Jason? And let me tell you, we had a rally in Columbia, Missouri on July 9th. And that rally, we drew members of every one of the 31 local realtor associations around the state. We had more than 300 people in that room in Columbia, all wearing yellow T-shirts, all saying vote no on 4 and 5. We distributed about 30,000 signs in one day that went out through this network. You're going to see signs everywhere. Realtors know how to do yard signs. That will be our key to defeating Amendment 4.
Yes, that is 30,000 in one day. That's a lot of signs. So I guess when
realtors are organized, they know the power of signs, and so they ordered extra signs, and more signs are coming. You're going to see more signs on this campaign. Vote no on 4, and also vote no on Amendment 5, which is, by the way, would let the legislature just ignore and blow off those constitutional taxpayer protections. Conversation for another day, hopefully, but that's what those messages will be. Vote no on 4, vote no on 5, and protect your power and protect majority rule.
Scott Charton is a spokesman for Missourians for Fair Governance. That group is a long-established campaign committee of the Missouri Association of Realtors. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
Be sure to listen to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air on July 24th, where we'll present a joint appearance with the two major contenders for Missouri's 1st Congressional District seat, Congressman Wesley Bell and former Congresswoman Cori Bush. the two Democrats will answer questions at the same time about their stances on domestic and foreign policy issues and their priorities for the St. Louis and St. Louis County-based district. If you have a question you want asked, send us an email to talk@stlpr.org. You can listen to this joint appearance with Wesley Bell and Cori Bush at noon and 7 p.m. on Friday, July 24th on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced and recorded by Jason Rosenbaum. Audio editing by Danny Wisentowski. Production assistance from our audio engineer, Aaron Dorr.
Podcast design by Aaron. Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.